had a similar type trouble. We couldn't see any pressure on the lock state. And there was some Swartz and myself, a bunch of us in the control center, that said, hey, close the blocking valve, and let's see if the vent valve's leaking. And in fact, really was. The vent valve was leaking, the lock vent valve, so we replaced it. So these guys were mimicking, really, what they'd seen us do. And unfortunately, weren't smart enough to figure out that after they hit the sun gun a couple of times, they didn't get any rise, they should have stopped right then and come to get some of us guys that were over to the, you know, the work control center and say, hey, what do you do now? Mm-hmm. It's just about as simple and straightforward as that. And so, close the vent, the blocking valve, without the instrumentation being hooked up, overpressurized. Turned out to be a godsend. We didn't know it that night, but three nights later, we finally sat down and took the number of times we were pressurized. Dick Swartz did, and some of the other guys. By that time, we had all of our engineering people down, trying to figure out where did it let go, where did the tank let go and everything. And by that time, we'd got all the instrumentation back from the C-777. That's where we found out about the 16 times we took that and figured out about what volume it had been in terms of pressure, and lo and behold, it went low. And that made everybody go back and check again. It kept coming out, it went low. And we checked again, and it went low. In other words, it blew at a lower pressure than it should have blown. That set us off on another tangent, which then we found that there was some structure that, the way it was designed, over the top of one feed duct, which was back around here, was sitting at a sharp angle. That was a stress riser, acting as a stress riser, and actually the tank had to let go at a lower pressure than it should have. And when we inspected some of the flight vehicles, S-2-1, 2, and 3 had the same condition. So really, that thing saved some flight vehicles. And you know, I mean, as you look back now, it was like a godsend. I've often wondered, why couldn't we find it another way? But so I guess that's kind of the history of S2T. So they were going to dump it in the Gulf, and I finally talked, all the debris, and I said, hey, let me have the thrust structure and take it back home. We'll make a mock-up out of it so we can, for our early problems in the S2, and I'll have a real close dimensional mock-up for mocking up all the flight birds. So I said, hey, let me put it on the AKV the first time it comes through from the Cape, take it back to Seal Beach, and let's save that thrust structure and make a real detailed mock-up out of it. So I came back, talked to Bob Weir about it. He said, yeah, he thought that was a good idea. So today, it sits at Seal Beach. Mm-hmm. The rest of it, we dumped in the Gulf. But the thrust structure is at Seal Beach right now. I never go down there. I go by to look at it. Mm-hmm. Kind of salute.
I see it.
Did you?
Just the top part of the J2 engine on doesn't have a complete nozzle on it.
But. That's right.
You should have a plaque saying what that is.
Yeah, I'd like to have it. I told him one day, hey, if you're going to sell that old surplus, let me have it. Let me get the first bid. I'd like to take it out to my farm. Uh-huh. And they said, how do you get it? I said, I don't know how the hell. I'll get it out there somehow. Make a swimming pool out of it or something. But then from there, I came back home. And we were checking out S21 at Seal Beach, getting it ready to go down there. We had quite a rework on the test stand. It was kind of surprising the amount of damage that we thought was done on the stand, that what really turned out to be done on the stand. You know, with all that darn debris laying all over the place, it was really hard to figure out what was damaged from a facility standpoint. Trying to get all, you know, all the debris off and everything. And it turned out that we were able to get the stand repaired, all the wiring back in, cabling back in, and we were ready to support S21 when it got there. So I came back home to get S21. To help out at stations 8 and 9, you know, kind of again, share my experience of what I knew about Ellie and how you operate in S2. Then I was put on S23. It was our first man bird. It was going to be the first vehicle that was Apollo 8. That was S23. They had a ladder fall and knock a hole through the bulkhead. And it was, they came and got me and said one night, Greer and Warner Gingelbach, Sam Yorkin, and said, I had got a real difficult task to do, and you know, that you take charge of S23 and get it through, you know, the whole cycle to the Cape to support Apollo 8. It's our first.
Is S23 the one that the ladder fell in?
Yeah, yeah. So we replaced the forward bulkhead on the hydrogen tank is when it went through, and we did a lot of other things. Anyhow, to make a long story short, we got it down there, and finally to KSC, and you know, through Mississippi, through the static firing.
In fact, this is that's S23 firing right there.
I was the first bird to fire on the A2's test stand. So I had the pleasure of activating both test stands and having the first bird fire both of them down. And then I went to AAP, so I kind of, after I got S23 through Mississippi and went over to Cape, then I came back and went to Skylabs, calling out, system program manager on that. So then when Apollo 8 flew in Bergen, asked me would I like to go down and watch S23 fly, and it was my baby, and I said, yeah, I sure would.
So let me,
I went down there and see it fly. So I went by the CSM, they did that on all their early vehicles. You know, here on the basic Apollo program. But on the S2, I was the only spacecraft guy they ever, you know, when I say spacecraft, the only single stage guy they had. And you know what, it just gives a program a focal point, you know, that for, you know, decision making, pushing, integrating the thing. Especially if you've got a facility involved in it, you know, which gives you another interface.
So Mississippi was quite important to your program here at the Seal Beach.
Yeah, because that was our acceptance firing, was there. In other words, that's what we had. That was the stop and step we had to make through in order to get qualified to, you know, or verified or certified to go on and fly the vehicle.
But did you do basic testing there? I mean, not basic testing, but I know your battleship testing, but did you do any testing before you went to fire, or just the automatic checkout?
No. S2, that was the purpose of S2T. S2T was a developmental bird.
Okay.
And yes, we, as I said, we went through the several tankings and from a developmental standpoint, sidewall pressurization developments, that's what that was all about, that superstructure up there.
And this is to see that all the valves work properly?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It took us from October until April to fire the bird. And that whole process was one of, it was developing, you know, developing either equipment, developing procedures, or facility or whatever, in order to get yourself to the posture that you can say, well, I really think I'm ready to fire now. And, you know, all the associated problems like the barges, we had a hell of a time making the LOX barges work. They had pumps on them that the cap hit real bad. We finally had to replace them. They weren't ours, they were GFP, but we just had a hell of a time with those LOX barges. In other words, all the fuel and the oxidizer came in the barge, and you hooked.
You stored in the barges too, didn't you? Did you pump into a storage facility?
No, yeah, they were stored in the barge, as far as we were concerned here. They came in up the Pearl River and into the locks to us, and set right over here. The storage facilities we had on site down there were high-pressure systems, heated with hydrogen, nitrogen. That was a bottle bank that set off over here. If you stand here in front of the test stand, you look over there, there's a high-pressure bottle bank. But there's the LOX barge set on this side, and LOX barge set on this side, and the hydrogen barge set on this side here is control center. Mm-hmm. And the hydrogen barge, we had very little trouble with this pressurization system. You run it, pressurize it up to about 8 psi, open up and just let it push through. But the LOX, you know, being real heavy, we pumped it. Say we had a hell of a time getting a positive head on those pumps, so she would boom, boom, boom. They were really big pumps. They had to get up as high as 5,000 GPM. And getting past 1,000 was like a miracle. So we finally got the pumps replaced. And our last goals were the, on the S2T were with the new pumps. And Helen's the school jock just about hit the button goal, you know, she bring us run through a chill down and about an hour and hit her low flow and high flow and let it go. No cavitation at all.
Were you able to simulate the filling rates with the cake filling rates?
Yeah, that's that was the idea. We did that at Santa Susana also. On battleship.
Is that all integrated between the Cape and you people Mississippi and
Santa
Susana?
Yeah, there, yeah. Uh-huh.
Did you know mathematically how fast you had to fill each stage?
Oh yeah. Uh-huh. That's what we know was the what you do, you go to the operational end, the Cape, and you come backwards from that, and everything you build toward then matches that. Mm-hmm. Like a firing on at the Mississippi, it was a simulated flight. Mm-hmm. You go through a simulated loading on the S1C. Then in turn, you load your own bird. Then in turn, once you go into the flight sequence, you punch in the flight, what we finally invented, what we call a facilities programmer, which simulated the S1C flight. And then in 150 seconds, after we'd punched in, you set and wait, then you get an automatic come in. That's a later birds than you do that on S2T. We punched in manually, you know. And but on the later birds, you just punched in the facilities programmer and you step right through the S1C staging and then the S2 flight. And then in turn, S2 cutoff and S4 fire. And that's the end of our sequence. So, yeah, we simulated the whole thing at Mississippi. So we were pretty sure the type of problems we'd have when we, you know, when the bird did get to the Cape. And the way I'll check out, or, you know, our procedural type things, or facility things.
Did you enjoy that Mississippi type of operation, or are you tired of that DOS site?
Oh, no, hey, I've worked, you know, right, most of my life in North America has been somewhere other than here. It's funny how I can walk around and I've been here 20, almost one, 24th year. And out of that, I don't guess I've really been at home, you know, in the LA area. It can't be over, I don't know, maybe 12 years.
Is that right?
It can't even be that much. More like I've probably been home about 7 or 8 years if I added it all up.
Yeah.
You know, I was in England with the B-45s. Back in 1951, and wife stayed here when I worked for a year. And then, you know, I was in Florida, Washington, Arizona, was a field service rep. So, no, I like that kind of work. The thing about, I guess, that, you know, you kind of get, I don't know, sentimental, I guess. I'm one of these people that I get so attached to something, and which I don't think is uncommon, but. But even though it's mechanical, the challenge of making something work gets so tight and close to you that when you finally do get it done, it's such a wonderful feeling. I don't think, you know, I read about people taking LSD and they're going on a trip and all that. And I'd kind of have a little bit of empathy, well, because that's kind of the type of trip or the experience I think that I get out of something like that. Here at the factory, you don't get that. You know, I run a thing out here and test, and it's wonderful, nice, know it's your own schedule. And you're, but it's not the same. Because it's been done. When you go do it first, it's another experience, kind of on the trip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Once the morale was real bad, it was mostly always real bad in Mississippi in the first days. They finally finished the auditorium, and I got all my people over there, all 600 of them, on two hunts over the base auditorium, and talked to them. And I told them, I said, hey, I've done a lot of things first in my life, and believe me, they don't come easy. None of them. Error. And if you came down here thinking that this was going to be easy, then you better get up and go home right now. I asked you to come, but I didn't promise you anything was going to be easy. So the door's open. I didn't lock it, and I'm damn tired of your wives calling me. Oh, Christ almighty, you know, wives, husbands, hell, calling you, raising hell with you all the time. You're no good, you're a slave driver and all that. So I know maybe you can't stop that, but by God, let me tell you, it won't be easy. And we got a long ways to go yet. So they all sat and looked at me like I guess that was some type of nut. But after we blew T-Bird up, I think that did something for them. You know, when you gather a whole bunch of people together like that, there are a lot of cliques. You know, they come from various places, and they, a few of them got something in common with each other, and they don't know anybody else. And so they're kind of, you know, either not good, or they don't like them or something. And I think that one common experience with them made them a team. That was, I think, something else that came good out of that. It gave them something to, in common, finally, to soar over. That they weren't had all, that's something in common. They'd all worked on it, suddenly one morning it's gone. And kind of like going to a funeral. So from that point on, the cliques just kind of disappeared. But say the thrill of doing something first, I think is not quite anything quite like it. So yeah, I like it. I'm 46 now, so I'm getting a little older. But if they came to me tomorrow and said, hey, we want you to go somewhere, and no one's ever done this before, so go do it, I'm sure that I'd go home and say, honey, they asked me to do it. I promise you, I never would do it again, but they'd come and ask me, and so I'd say, and she'd probably say, well, all right, and I'd leave. Go do it. And I think I'd probably still enjoy the hell out of it.
Well, I did some of that when I was younger, but not too much later. Pastor.
How old are you now, Ron?
57.
57? Well, you've got 11 years on me, so.
Yeah. In fact, my birthday's Monday, I'll be 58, but this will be my, this is my 34th year. And, of course, I spent a lot of time away in the early days. Mm-hmm. I was in Australia, right field, in Alamogordo. Mm-hmm.
Were you in LAD?
Yeah.
You were? In field service?
Yeah.
You were? Well, I don't remember.
Well, let me tell you this. Let's turn this off to say.